All right, welcome everybody to our question and answer episode of Adoption Hacks. It's Candace Laycock and Callie Troyer. We're so happy to be with you. Today we're going to be answering some questions that you guys send in, so we're excited to cover a whole lot of topics. But first, I just want to know how you're doing, Callie. What's going on with you?
Yes, well, first of all, I feel like it's been forever since I've talked to you, and certainly since we recorded an episode together, so I'm so excited to be back together recording this today, but we are doing great. I don't think I shared this last season, but we are officially back in our second adoption, this time from China, and we are excited and nervous and all the things, and we are moving, albeit slowly, with COVID towards our little boy in China.
That's awesome. Do you have any idea of when?
Not as of this moment. So, like a lot of families that are in the international adoption process right now, COVID has just thrown a wrench in everything, in timelines, in process, in all of that. And so we are hopeful it could be by, you know, early next year. We are matched with a little boy who we are going to call Sam. And so we are very excited about that, but no real timeline, unfortunately, to share. But what about you? What about you guys? What's your life look like these days?
It's been very busy too. We are also in our second adoption. And since I recorded last, we have been matched with a little girl in Thailand. She is 2 years old right now, and we are also at a very fun COVID standstill. the next step for us is the Thailand board to approve our match, and so we're just waiting on whenever they meet and approve us, and then we'll be traveling within 3 to 5 months after that. So we're also hoping for early next year, but who knows? Big question mark. So we're just waiting and trusting, and we just got to send her a package last month with Saja had a lot of letters to send in to her, so I hope she likes glittery letters. I'll say that.
Oh, that is so sweet. All right, so while we're on the topic, let's actually start with this question. What is it like being in the adoption process the second time? How is it different than the first time? How is it the same?
I think for me, it's different. It's better in the way that I think I'm a little more patient, which is good because COVID's really pushing that to the brink. But I just remember with our first adoption, just wanting to push things through on my own so hard and just like call every day and try to get something done. And this time I think I've been a little more laid back and been able to accept that there are so many things out of my control. So trying to be a parent who's involved and is checking in, but is not quite as overbearing as I was, number one. What about you?
Yes, I would say it is almost exactly the same for us. So I will, first of all, start out by saying, though, I really thought the second time around we would be pros and we wouldn't have the same fears or the same questions that we had the first time. But it really is a lot of those same feelings of not knowing the timeline and looking at the fee schedule and being like, oh my goodness. And so all of those questions and all of that comes back. But I am with you. I think this time around we are much more, I don't think patience the right word, but certainly more open to whatever the timeline is. And I think part of that is just starting an adoption process during COVID. We knew it was going to be up in the air. And so we've just been really thankful. It's been a huge answer to prayer that we've been able to be, I think, more present where we are this adoption and really soak up the time with our little guy at home and not wish away every single day, even though we also cannot wait until we get to Sam.
With the paperwork, I thought like, oh, this will be such a breeze to fly through. And it's amazing how much stuff I just like data dumped from last time. I'm like, how do I do this? How does the USCIS work again? It's like, yes. I have to relearn it all this time.
Yes. And last time with Korea being non-Hague and China being Hague, I don't think I quite knew how different those processes were, especially, I mean, you get this too, like Korea is party to the Hague Convention. So I was like, oh, it can't be that different. It's just a different form we fill out. But oh my goodness, the dossier is completely different. The process is completely different. And so in so many ways, I feel like I'm right back at the beginning again, just learning everything all over. So it's definitely been an adventure with the paperwork and all of that.
Do you talk with Gideon about Sam? How does that go?
We have definitely started to. So just as a little update, so Gideon is now 5.5. So he now recognizes pictures of Sam. He calls him Baby Sam, which is really funny because they're actually the same age. But he calls him Baby Sam consistently, and he'll recognize the picture. And he can tell you that that's his brother, but doesn't have any further understanding yet of what that means, or that Sam will be coming home and living in our house forever. And I think it'll be a little bit different. We're currently in the process of setting up Sam's room and moving my office out of the space. And so I think once we start to get his room together and especially set up his bookshelf, because that seems to be Gideon's focus in many areas, I think it's going to maybe start to sink in a little bit more. But what about you guys? Have you guys had those conversations yet?
Yeah, I feel like maybe we started too early because we have been in this process for so long that, like, for a while I thought Sasha's just got, we kept talking about baby sis before, you know, we were even matched. And I feel like he just kind of always thought she was just this imaginary girl that was, we were just always going to talk about. But when he got to see her picture, it made it real for him. And so I don't think he quite knows how it's going to be, like, when he has to share that attention, but he is very excited.
Oh, that's so sweet. That's so sweet. I think that is one of the biggest things I'm looking forward to, is just seeing them together, finally. Like, we have this picture and we have these videos of Sam. And then, of course, we know Gideon so well. But I think that's what I'm just so excited about, is to see how they interact together and how their personalities come together. So, can't wait.
Okay, well, let's talk about starting an adoption during COVID. For any parents who are listening and they're considering, or they are just starting the process, and adopting now of all time seems especially uncertain. Any thoughts for them?
I will say I get this question all the time through social media, through the families at our church that we walk alongside, that those initial steps and learning about the different avenues of adoption, they just keep asking, is now a good time to adopt? And I guess the first caveat I will say is that this is a challenging time to adopt. The paperwork chase, when you have agencies that are closed, it just takes a lot longer. And so I know you mentioned this with the home study and the paperwork and just jumping back into that. For me, I thought it would go a lot faster because we had already done it the first time, but it did not go according to my schedule at all. It took us about 3 times longer than it did the first go around with our home study to get all of that done. And so it's definitely a challenging time, certainly with international timelines are up in the air and processes are up in the air, and you have quarantines and vaccines and different processes that families just didn't have to think about before. But I still always encourage families, if you feel like you are being led to adoption, if you're interested, still jump in and research, because the need for kids has not changed. If anything, it has grown with COVID and families being at home together. I know our local foster care system is asking for families to please sign up, jump in, because the need is only growing coming out of COVID. And so I will say it's different, and in some ways it's harder, but on the other hand, the need is still very much there. I will say we've been getting emails because we applied for a grant through Show Hope last adoption and actually received a grant from them. We applied again this this last cycle for grants, and so we've been getting their emails and their updates, and they are just asking people to spread the word about their grants because the number of applications has plummeted as adoptions, people just haven't been as willing to jump into adoptions right now, or adoptions have slowed. And so I know this time around, applying for grants and finding some matching grants and funding has actually been easier than it was the first adoption in a lot of ways, because they're just asking for families. They don't have as many families, and they still have funds. And so for families listening, that finances are a barrier, which I would say is the case for a lot of people, now might be a good time to start looking into some of those grants and seeing what's out there.
Yeah. That's a really good thought. Question is from Nancy. She said, "Hi, I love following y'all's podcast. Would love to hear some wisdom from other adoptive mamas on how they communicated the message of adoption for older siblings when they are bringing adopted children home." Her question is, how do you communicate to your older children your family's why for adopting that's appropriate for young children or toddlers?
Well, I think I would preface any answer here by just reminding all of our listeners that neither of us have brought home a second child yet, nor do either of us have bio kids, which I know is part of the question as well. And I know in our case specifically, we also have a child who is not developmentally typical. So his understanding of this process so far has been different than maybe another 5.5-year-old. And so he's not asking those questions yet about Sam's story. He's not really asking those questions yet about his own story. And so any answer that I can give would just be completely theoretical and sort of how we think we'll bring that up as the time comes. But I would say for us, definitely keeping it age appropriate. I think for us, one thing that's been helpful, maybe it doesn't answer this question specifically, but as we're thinking about how do we not overshare our child's story, what do we share with people in general, even outside of our own kids? And that has been to think of answers that maybe help our kids understand or help others understand the context of adoption without revealing specific aspects of our kids' story. And so, for example, if you're adopting from Korea, to say that the majority of women who choose adoption for their kids in Korea are single moms who don't feel supported in their culture, perhaps financially or socially or by their family, to raise a child in their situation. Or when we look at China, when we talk about kids being abandoned, sometimes that brings with it a lot of emotions, and it feels like this very visceral thing of like, oh my goodness, how could you ever do that? But helping people understand that that's a reality because there is no legal relinquishment for adoption in China. And you're talking about a culture that doesn't yet have robust Medicaid programs, and a lot of hospitals require payment up front. And so if you give birth to a child who has significant needs and you can't care for that child's medical needs, some of these parents feel like that's their only option is to abandon their child somewhere publicly because they can't legally hand their child somewhere safe. And so they'll abandon the child where they'll very quickly be found, but they won't go to jail or be in trouble with the law because maybe they have other kids to care for, or they have other family members to care for. And so I think just helping them understand generally why kids might need a family can be helpful. And that way you don't feel like you're oversharing your child's story, but you can educate someone who you feel like would benefit from knowing that or have some context around it. And so the way that they look at adoption or the way that they look at, these kids' stories is a little bit different. So doesn't directly answer about kids and age appropriate, but I think it's great that you're asking this question because I know for us, our son tends to repeat stuff and he repeats things exactly as you tell him. And he doesn't quite understand yet when it might be appropriate to share his story or Sam's story when the time comes and when it's not. And so I think it's good to think through, what is the developmental age of your child? What is the unique circumstances of your child? And so I think this would be a really good question as you're going through the home study phase and some of those visits leading up to the adoption or even directly after, to ask your social worker, depending on your very specific situation and your specific kids, that very question. I think that would be a wonderful question to discuss with someone who knows your family, who knows your kids, and who has a better understanding of your new child's story as well.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I love that you said, like, how you said, like, keeping things general. I think that's a great idea. And just talking about, like, why children need to be adopted and you know, sort of normalizing, like, this is a way that families come together. But sharing those specific things, for me at least, it would be important that my adopted child understood those specific details when they're ready, at the age appropriate time, before I shared that with any other child, I think, in the family. I think that's how I would handle it, because I wouldn't want, you know, that to come out in the heat of the moment with anything. So I would wait until my adopted child felt very comfortable and confident in that's in their story, you know, depending on, you know your family, depending on how much you think those other children can handle sharing with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it is something to think about, because I think having young kids in the home, or even kids who aren't super young but are still processing families coming together in a different way, I think it is important that they have at least some sort of context, because then they start thinking of questions potentially of, like, oh, well, if this child needs a family, is there a situation where I'm going to need a family? And I think that could bring up fears, especially if you have kids already in the home who came from adoption or foster care into your family. I think it is good to address those fears and answer their questions in a way that doesn't overshare your new child's story, but that is talked about and giving that space in your family to talk about those hard things. All right, and then our next question. How do you find the balance of talking openly about adoption, but also not focusing on it so much that it becomes the sole thing that your child identifies with?
Another great question. I think that for us, it's really been child-led. We've been incredibly open. We bring it up at times, just so it's, he feels that freedom to ask questions and to know that it's kind of a safe space to for him to process out loud sometimes. But we don't overly push it. We don't talk about it every day or every night at bedtime or anything like that. But a lot of times he will just have questions. And it's honestly amazing to me, like, how deeply he thinks about things, or how far he takes, you know, there's one thing we say to him and he takes it, like, logically. It's like several steps down the road. And so for us, we're just really following his lead with that, how much he wants to discuss it or wants to know. So I don't think that, you know, it is his, like, only identity, but it's definitely something he knows about himself and he's beginning to understand more.
For sure. Yeah, I think as we have been through adoptee-led trainings, as we've been through books about adoption, I think the one theme that comes up again and again is just making sure we're leaving the door open. And I think pre-adoption, like before our son actually came home, when I thought about talking to him about adoption, I just always imagined these really long, formal conversations where we are digging deep into his past and the cultural implications of adoption in South Korea and all of these things. And what has realistically happened is that at first, we very intentionally looked for ways to just start the conversation while he's young so he doesn't remember it, and just getting comfortable with bringing it up and talking about it here and there. And so I know we did an episode this past season about using children's books to open that conversation. And now that we've done that a bit, it comes more naturally. And so we just bring up adoption when it comes up. And so for me, I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but I just kind of made it a reminder to myself that anytime we're driving down the road and I am thinking about his birth mom or his foster mom and he's in the car and, you know, there's no one else in the car that would be nosy about his story, I'll just mention, hey, bud, I wonder what your birth mom's doing today. I really hope she's doing well today. And just mention it out loud so he knows that the door is open whenever he's ready to walk through it. And it's okay to wonder and ask questions. But it's not something that we're sitting down necessarily and deep diving into his life book once a week or once a month. It's just continuously, whatever way we can, propping that door open so when the time comes, he's ready to walk through it. And then I think like any kid, helping build that identity in the rest of his life as well. And so for us, and I know for you guys as well, faith is a big part of our life. And so he goes to Sunday school and he learns that he's wonderfully created and that, you know, he's part of this family, this church family as well. And so making sure that we are allowing him to find his identity and reminding him of his identity, just like we would any kid in different areas, and just reminding him how special and amazing he is just because he's him and not just because of his story or his adoption.
Next question is from Kelsey. She said, what's the best advice on balancing cultural practices in the home when you have children from different countries/cultures? Another one that we're like not experts on yet, but we are preparing for that. Another thing that like it's really child-led in our home. We try to like lay it all out there, have so many like Korean things. We talk about Korean holidays. We have Korean food. We talk about what Korea looks like and what's going on there, what the weather is like there today. And some things he really gravitates to and some things he doesn't. And just trying to kind of, at this point in his life, just letting him, seeing what works with him. And so we're trying to slowly, even now with him, do that with Thailand stuff. So we'll talk about different Thai things. We might have Thai food for dinner and talk about how baby sis is, what she eating in Thailand right now. So just trying to slowly, at their age, at their level, bring those things in. Food is, I think we talked about this before, like food is the best way to do it at this age. So that's an easy connector. So that's what we'll do when our little girl comes home, is just highlight those things. It'll be interesting to see like how we juggle those different things, but I think we can weave it all in together.
Yes. Yeah, I think sometimes when we talk about balancing, I know at least for me, because I'm a very, I'm a pretty literal person and I like the sense of fairness. And so I think sometimes in my brain, I think of it being like this 50-50 thing. And just to be totally honest, like our family, just even our culture, we have our own traditions and our holidays and all of those things that we really want our son to be a part of and to get a sense of belonging from. And so we're careful to establish those traditions that are family's traditions, that are like not necessarily purely American, but they're American in the sense of like my husband and I are white Americans. And so they do keep with that culture. And so we establish traditions as our family, but then we also are pulling in pieces from Korea. And so just as you said, food is a big one for us. Our son still loves Korean food. And so we cook Korean food all the time. And we celebrate holidays with our friends who also adopted from Korea in most cases. We celebrate Lunar New Year and we celebrate some of these holidays that we honestly didn't celebrate before or maybe celebrated for fun before, but now we do it regularly and routinely. But they really exist together. And some holidays, it is more of, you know, our culture. And other holidays, it's purely Korean culture. And then sometimes we bring those things together. Now looking at bringing Sam's Chinese culture in too, it's making Chinese dumplings for his birthday and teaching our family to make Chinese dumplings. Not a pastime that we ever would have considered before because they're very labor intensive and we're not very good at cooking, but just finding ways to honor our kids' culture and to let them know that one's not better than the other. Like, we are a multicultural family now, and we want that, and we want that for our kids. And like you said, I think it will ebb and flow as our kids want it to ebb and flow, but just making sure that we're pulling in those pieces and, again, leaving that door open, and also getting our family excited about it. I think that's the part that I love most about it, is seeing our parents and our grandparents folding Chinese dumplings at the table, or eating japchae, or making bibimbap with us, and just seeing them get excited about it. And I think that's always our goal, is how can we bring our family together over these shared traditions. And so sometimes that looks like making Christmas cookies and dumplings together, and we just merge those things together and establish these new shared traditions.
One thing that's been kind of developed newly for us this year is, as Sasha becomes more social and friends become a bigger deal, he has a friend at school who is Korean. And that made a big difference in how he viewed Korean things, because then it wasn't just like mom and dad talk about it. It was like he had this bond with a peer, and, you know, they would sit at the lunch table and eat their seaweed together, or they would talk about different things about being Korean. And so that it was really amazing to see, like, how he lit up and he loved talking about it with his friend. And for him to, like, observe that Korean family, I think, has been really helpful. So if you're able to, you know, if your child's the right age, like, getting them into an area where they might be able to connect with a friend their age of that culture is great.
For sure. And I think it's been really valuable for us, as much as possible, to get our, not just us, not just the three of us, but to get our extended family into situations where parents and grandparents are the minority, and to make sure that we all go to a Korean restaurant and it is not perfect and we're all trying to pronounce the dishes off the menu, but making sure that we're using the correct names and letting our child interact with their culture in a situation where it doesn't feel forced. Like, it's not just a party that we're putting on where, you know, only our kids are Korean. Like, there are situations that we go in and we're learning, and to just help our kids see too, like, that we are fumbling through it sometimes, but that's just how our cultures are coming together and our traditions are coming together. All right, our next question comes from Abby, and Abby asks, what is the best advice for when you first come home?
Well, Callie and I did a great episode on this. Was that last season? Yes. We talked about attachment practices and tips, and we gave a lot of our, like, very, very practical things that we did when we came home, as far as, like, language and food and cocooning and all of that. So I would definitely direct you towards that episode, because I think that's a really good one to start with.
Definitely go back and listen to, I think we split it into two episodes at the end of last season, and we go a lot more in depth with this. But the first thing I think I would say, because this comes up with families a lot, and that's that the first week or 2 weeks or month or few months might be really hard. And I think a lot of times in the adoption world, those first moments with your child can be romanticized, and this love at first sight and happily ever after. And for a lot of families, that's not the reality. You are stepping into a situation, depending on the age of the child, they may feel like you've just kidnapped them, because that's their level of understanding of what's going on, their developmental level. And you are walking into a situation with a child that you have been in love with on paper for a really long time, but you don't actually know. And so I think my biggest advice for that initial transition is two things. One is remembering to give yourself grace, in that you might not connect right away and you might not feel warm fuzzies right away, and that's okay. And the second one is to give grace to your child and to not go into it feeling like you need to fix all the things, fix the behaviors, fix the developmental delays. Your job in those first few weeks and months, and even in some cases the first few years, are to connect with your child and to pursue them and to realize you're both grieving, and their grief is bigger than yours, certainly, and their loss is likely bigger than yours, but you are both grieving, and to remember that and to continue to pursue your child. And I think I mentioned this in the episode last season, but I think sometimes we go into adoption and as adoptive parents, we're ready to skip to the end of the story and that happily ever after. And we look at all of the context of why the child needed to be adopted and we're like, oh, but this is going to be, you know, for better or for worse. Like this is, your thought is this is going to be better in the end because this child did not have a permanent family and we're providing that. But then to remember that you wouldn't go to someone who's just lost a spouse and say, don't worry, you'll find another spouse. And the same, I think we sometimes forget that with our kids, especially when they're toddlers, is like, oh, but you have this permanent family now and you didn't. Like, they still lost a family or a caregiver or a nanny. And you're asking a three-year-old to process this loss. And we sometimes forget that and we're like, why aren't they sleeping? Why aren't they eating? Like, why aren't they meeting milestones? Because your child just, like, their whole world just turned upside down. And it sounds so obvious to talk about that here, but I remember being in that, in those first few weeks and being like, oh my gosh, it's been 2 weeks and he's not sleeping through the night yet. Well, yes, he's grieving and he's jet lagged and he's trying to make sense of all of this. And so I would just say grace and more grace and more grace for yourself. If you don't feel the emotions you think you're going to feel right away, if things don't look exactly like you think they're going to look, and especially grace for your child who's trying to learn and to grieve and just process through so, so much during that time.
Yeah, that's really good, Kelly. Along with that, I would say take breaks where you can, like be strategic with your spouse, your family, whoever you're doing this with, and give each other time to just get away for a moment, because it can be very tense situations, and so you just need some time. I know I would have to just like go to the gym and just like zone out totally for a while. And so do what you can. And if you're not in that sort of situation where like you can do that, I would say have people in your life who can help you with the laundry or with other children or something. Find somebody who can help you through those times where you can have a little rest. And it, like you said, it is grief. It amazed me that a child, a baby, a 17-month-old would go through the same stages of grief that an adult would go through. I felt like I saw it before my very eyes. Like, I feel like I learned what grieving was at like a ground level through Saja's adoption, because I saw the denial. I saw the anger. I saw everything. Like, he went through it. And so just being empathetic through that, and like you said, like realizing that their whole world got flipped upside down, and they didn't have the capability of preparing themselves for that in any way. And not taking it personally if they push you away. And we've done so much work to finally get there, and then that child rejects you and hates you and is angry at you. It can be like a gut punch. But knowing that it's not that, it's just this grieving process, and it's short term, and you will get through it. But it's, yeah, it may not be those warm and fuzzies right away.
Yeah, and I would just add, I know this sounds so cliche, and we all know this cognitively, but again, you get in there and emotions are high and you're jet lagged, and then you come home and then you're both jet lagged, but especially your child who's maybe never been on an airplane, never been in a different time zone, and it's so easy to forget, but love is a choice. And I know for me, I wrestled for months, even after the attachment came, even after we had made it through that very initial transition. I struggled because I feel like I had failed as a mom in those first weeks because I didn't immediately feel this warm, fuzzy feeling. I would have done anything for this child, that because he was my son and because I had said, yes, he is my son. But I didn't feel those warm fuzzies right away. I didn't feel like his mom right away. And I struggled with guilt over that for a really long time. And I had to remind myself and rewrite the story in my head that love is a choice. And love is choosing to do the thing that you maybe don't feel like in that moment to take care of this child and to love this child and to pursue this child. And so there's a quote from a book, and I can't even remember what it was, but it talks about like a choosing at every moment. And that phrase has stuck with me through the ups and downs of parenting and the different phases of parenting, but especially when I think about those first weeks and rewriting that story and just redeeming all of those emotions and the guilt that I had initially through that is just that thinking back that it was a choosing at every moment. And some days you were living moment to moment because it was just hard. But it's just that choosing again to say, I'm going to pursue this child that maybe doesn't feel like mine yet, that maybe doesn't like me yet, that maybe is throwing food across my house. And oh my goodness, my house used to be so clean like 2 weeks ago. And just coming to terms with all of that and just still saying, I'm going to choose you because I love you, and letting those feelings come later if they don't come right away.
I know, just on a practical side, one thing that was really helpful for us was a lot of resources we studied, you know, and emphasized the importance of like the eye contact and connecting that way. And absolutely, I totally agree. But at first, that was too hard for Sasha. And so forcing that was just made him angrier. And so doing things where the focus was not on us and not on the relationship was really helpful. Like going for stroller rides was great because he could see everything and it was a moment of rest for him because he wasn't almost like assaulted with like what had just happened. And so those like little distractions were really, really good for us. And then just sitting within those moments of grief, it's really hard to just like be with a child you can't comfort at all. But I would a lot of times just put headphones in and just hold him. And, you know, I'm here, I'm chilling. If you want me, great. If not, it's all good. But not forcing that relationship, just letting him kind of come to us was good. But in the moment, it can feel like, what if this is just how it is? What if this is just what parenting forever will always be like with this child? I remember having those fears of like, I don't know this kid. Maybe this is just how he is. Maybe he's just a very angry child. And that fear really, really was heavy for me. But so if you're there, just a little bit of hope that those first days can be really heavy and really dark. But gradually, week by week, it will get better. And if it's not, then maybe it's time to reach out to that social worker, reach out to an adoption counselor, therapist, you know, someone who can help you with those steps if you're not seeing that change. Okay, for the last question, we both get this one a lot, but what would you say to prospective adoptive parents?
Oh, well, I feel like that last question, we kind of left with some heavy stuff and we talked about the hard because I know those first days, I just don't want families to be as surprised as we were even hearing that from people. So I don't think you can hear that enough. But I will just say for prospective families, though we talk about the hard things, we don't shy away from that on the podcast. Adoption has definitely been the hardest thing we've walked through, but it has also been the most worth it. And I remember in those first early days, one of the things that I would use to comfort myself in those first weeks is like I would tell myself, literally I would repeat this, families do this more than once, so it has to get better. And now that we're in the second adoption, we can obviously both honestly say that it's worth it, and you do get through those hard days, and it really is so worth it. And I know it's a crazy time with COVID. I know there's a lot of unknowns, but, you know, Candace and I both stepped into it in this season knowing all of the unknowns, and so you know, it really has. It's just so worth it. And our boys are so precious and so sweet. And for families that are interested, we've done 2 prospective family calls in the past. And we're going to bring those back this fall, looking at October for a date. So we will keep you guys posted. But that would be a wonderful place to start if you are considering adoption, thinking about adoption. We talk about the different paths to adoption and give space for you guys to answer any questions in a group setting.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for listening through season 4. This is the final episode of season 4. So thank you so much for listening. We love you guys. We feel so connected to you all. And it's just always great. So we'll see you soon.
See you soon.